Hello, and welcome back to the episode on biohacking and bioharmonizing your skincare routine with Amitai Eshal. If you missed the first part, I recommend you go back to the previous episode, episode number 76, to learn about why skincare matters, even beyond aesthetics, for longevity and possibly even performance. We talked about the most important lifestyle factors to nail in order to optimize your skin, the problem with certain natural skincare products, our thoughts on sunscreens, and much more. Today, we're covering the second part. In this continuation, we discuss all kinds of different popular skincare ingredients, including peptides, antioxidants, mushrooms, amino acids, methylene blue, certain extracts, all kinds of other molecules, and some of the more controversial practices of the beauty and skincare industry. All of this and much more with Amitai Eshal, the CEO and co-founder of Young Goose, which is one of the leading skincare companies using scientific formulations and stays up to date with the latest research around all things skin health so that we don't have to. Amitai is obsessed with skin health and performance optimization, and he shares all of his knowledge, the research, and more on Young Goose's Biohacking Beauty podcast. After our conversation, I did go ahead and place my first ever skincare product order. That was their Care NAD Plus Boosting Moisturizer. So if my skin looks especially radiant and glowing in the coming weeks and months, now you know why. Everything mentioned will be in the show notes, which will be at mindbodypeak.com/77. If this kind of thing interests you, you want to grab a Young Goose skincare product, you can do that and use the code Nick Urban on checkout to save 20%. Now, let's pick up right where we left off last week. Let's go on to some of the active molecules that are the base of most skincare products and also some of the ones that aren't in most skincare products that Young Goose has decided to implement.
So when we're talking about, let's say, active ingredients right now that are popular, let's say there are three camps. The first camp, that's more in the last like 10, 20 years, that is agents that cause renewal. So in general, our body only responds to inflammation as far as renewal. Our body doesn't know it needs to repair a wrinkle, because wrinkles do not have any inflammatory, you know, signal emitting from them. So you could think of a bone that completely healed, but it healed wrong, like it healed in a bad angle. You really need to go back and re-break that bone in order to have it heal properly. And in the last 20 years, mainly like medical skincare, but also we can see it now in most skincare, they've been concentrated in constantly asking for that renewal, attaching inflammation to the skin, whether it's peeling, whether it's retinol, like a type of vitamin A that does that. The problem is when you do it too often, and we're going back to that Venn diagram of the three things that you should notice or be mindful of, you're getting a skin that is exhausting its reservoir of renewal ability without any support. So that can be an issue. And what we're seeing right now, because it's like a generation later, 20 years after this paradigm started to become prominent, is people that they have thinner skin, the skin's getting bruised more, is looking more, you know, again, like see-through, more rigid. There are many problems with it. And a more fundamental level, the skin, the cells have reached, a lot of the cells have reached their Hayflick limit. We ask them to split too much. We can create other issues. Like we did mention senescent cells. So you're exacerbating the skin's ability to kind of eliminate those, eliminating the stem cells that the skin kind of saved for later on, have the skin be able to intake less nutrients. So even though the skin can look good for a few more years, in the long run, it's going to look worse. That's number one. The other one are antioxidants. Antioxidants are great, but most companies are going to have them in a way where until they reach your skin, most of them have already been, you know, kind of nullified. They've kind of run their course. But that's another thing that is very popular. And the third one are peptides, which I would say like in the last 10 years became popular. Obviously, within the biohacking community, most of them are injected or some of them are taken orally. Peptides are basically amino acids. They're basically proteins. But the way that the body uses peptides is like computer code. So you can think of whatever the body wants to do, it needs to create a peptide, and the peptide kind of is a computer code to have the body do whatever. Unfortunately, the skin is not very good in getting commands through it. So the fact that we have peptides that function through the skin, most of the time you're better off injecting them or attaching them with inflammation, and then they can help a little bit. But even though we use peptides, it's like the third ingredient we think of. First, we want to use other ingredients. And that kind of brings me to the ingredients that we use. So as I mentioned a few times, we started with our NAD boosting product. And you can really think of it as like a sirtuin activating compound. So we have our DNA. Our DNA basically is the recipe for whatever our cells need to do. In every cell in our body, there is the full information to how to be Nick, how to be Amite, how the body should function. But since all the information is there, most of it is hidden. I think not surprisingly. Most of it, the information on how to be a heart cell, a liver cell, is not expressed in our skin and vice versa. So when we grow older, because of DNA damage, because of lack of NAD, the enzymes or the genes that are in charge of having the DNA express what it needs to express and hide what it needs to hide start and become dysfunctional, and stuff and information that's supposed to be hidden is now, you know, being able to be read, and vice versa. And the cells become a little confused. NAD and sirtuins, which are those genes, are the ones that kind of reverse that process or maintain that process for as long as we can. That's why NAD is called like the molecule of life. Sirtuins are called our longevity genes or anti-aging genes. So the first product, it's a moisturizer, was designed to take care of that, to activate sirtuins, to fuel them with NAD, which is their fuel, etc. But then we learned that alone, it's not going to create that good of a result. It's more like a longevity approach to skincare. So we needed to ask the skin to do specific things. And we can do it through inflammation. We can do it in other ways as well. But we matched some peptides that ask the skin to create collagen, etc. Within that product and within an eye product that's very similar. It's a cream for the eyes. It's like it's mini-me. It's the same product, but for the eyes. But what we really did is develop a series of serums that are very individual or very, very specific. One, we talked about renewal. So we have a retinol. But as I said, for every renewal process, you want to kind of support that process. So it's matched with a proprietary blend of biomimetic lipids, lipids that are mimicking how your skin builds its protective layer. So retinol doesn't really go ahead and creates as much stress on the skin, but with all the benefits. That's number one for renewal. We have a product that eliminates senescent cells. Again, that's important because these are what make the skin dysfunctional. And then we can see, for example, so we published a study on it, we can see that when we eliminate them, 14 different genes that are, you know, kind of lowering their activity with age collagen genes, elastin genes, everything that keeps your skin in a youthful state, they start to function again. We have another one for people who become drier with age, a product that makes the skin create more hyaluronic acid, which is what keeps the skin hydrated, or kind of has the skin, helps the skin contain moisture. And we have another one where we're going to release very soon, which completely rebuilds the skin protective layer. And that you can think of it like a leaky gut protocol for the skin. But these are kind of what we were focusing on. Within those, a few ingredients that we really like. First of all, we did mention retinol and biomimetic lipids. As far as senolytic or senescent cells, we use an algae extract that's very heavy in something called fucoxanthin or fucoin, which are, they're modulating the mTOR pathway in the skin. So it means the skin's ability to sense when it is deprived of nutrients, and then it tries to kind of preserve itself and then give it nutrients. And then it's like, wow, I need to preserve myself. Now I really need to repair itself. So we can play around with it and create like really good renewal results through that. As far as hyaluronic acid, we use an adaptogenic mushroom that's called snow mushroom, but also another patent that's called Aquacell, which both are very good at elevating hyaluronic acid levels. As an antioxidant, we're in love with an antioxidant that is called lipochromin 6, which is similar to C60, if anyone knows C60, but it's more that for the skin. And the reason we're obsessed with it is because, as we said before, it's actually not only an antioxidant, but it also nullifies the free radicals that are associated with carbon free radicals and nitrogen free radicals. So not only oxidative stress, but also other types of free radical stress, which our body has no ability to deal with on its own. So it's kind of a much more broad spectrum antioxidant.
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on resveratrol in skincare?
Oh, that's a great question. So we actually use a patented version. And why is that important? Because resveratrol is actually toxic for the skin. If we think of sirtuins as those genes that are, you know, maintaining our DNA integrity or epigenetics, NAD is the fuel, resveratrol is a gas pedal. The problem is that it does it through hormesis. It does it through stress. And the skin doesn't have the enzyme to break down resveratrol, like our gut, for example, has. So what happens is that it becomes toxic in very low amounts in the skin. And if you buy a normal resveratrol product, what you're going to see there is that it's like maybe the last ingredient or close to the last ingredient in the ingredient list, which means that there is a very low amount of it. What we do is we ferment resveratrol, and we actually introduce the enzyme that the skin lacks in the fermentation process. And then it's 50 times more bioavailable and it's non-toxic. But that's a great question, because that's going to be a product that people are going to use and have no idea that that's actually toxic for them.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And a couple other ones I'm curious about. First of all is like overall hyaluronic acid, HLA, in its like liposomal form. Do you find that like, taken internally has any benefit?
Yeah. So it does, because our joints need hyaluronic acid as well. Lipolyzed or not, the problem with hyaluronic acid, if it's going to be too small, so hyaluronic acid comes in different sizes, it's going to be too small, it's going to irritate the gut. So about liposomal, I haven't seen like research saying it's better per se, but it's just about not irritating the gut. There has been studies showing that it does translate in like skin health if you take it internally, but also for joints and for any type of tissue that needs to retain moisture, hyaluronic acid is going to be a part of that. And obviously that's why I recommend also taking it internally.
Next up is a ingredient, I guess, two blue ingredients that seem to have made their way into popular skincare products these days. And I personally have both of them.
Can I guess?
Go ahead and guess.
So probably you're talking about GHKCU, and then you're going to be talking about methylene blue.
Nailed it. That's it.
All right. Yeah. So GHKCU is a copper peptide. We use it, but we also use a different type of copper peptide, which has a smaller molecular weight, smaller size. And both of them are very good, especially matched with inflammation. As I said, on their own, they are better injected. But when we talk about like overall skin health, when they are matched with some kind of stimulant, with some kind of inflammation, there are positive results we can derive from that. Especially when we talk about the skin, they help the skin deal with glycation. So glycation is when sugar molecules, for that matter, attach to proteins. And in the skin, it is expressed as rigidity and thinness. And copper peptides, what they do is they help the skin thicken, and they also help the skin with flexibility. So they kind of negate that effect, which is another hallmark of aging, by the way. As far as methylene blue, it's problematic because it's very blue. So there are companies who are using methylene blue in skincare. We were looking at it, I don't know, 2016, 2017. And I take methylene blue every day. So I'm going to get to that in a second. But as far as a skin product or a topical, it's very problematic to get good amounts. The minute you get any effective dose, you're effectively dyeing the skin blue. Like there's no way around it. What I would say is that methylene blue in relatively low dosages, being taken orally or through the gum with a troche, this actually improves mitochondrial function. And there is a growing body of research showing that it is very good when combined with red light therapy, which stimulates the mitochondria. So those together will improve the skin through a different way of absorption. If someone doesn't like their tongue being blue or their lips, they can just swallow it. It's actually very bioavailable through the gut. And there are some suppositories, but again, very available through the gut. There's no real need.
Yeah. I interviewed Mark Sloan several episodes ago. He's the author of The Ultimate Guide to Methylene Blue, and we dove deep on it, and it's pretty fantastic. But one thing that I've noticed in my own experience using it very frequently is that a single drop can make a mess if you're not careful. It can stain like an entire sink. So I can imagine it'd be hard to incorporate into skincare products.
Yeah. Sometimes they take blue carnitine, which is by Troscriptions. But it has some other things for performance, like it's a nootropic with methylene blue. And I take it before jujitsu sometimes. And I have a series of mouth guards that look like a hippie mouth guards because they look like a tie-dye mouth guard. Because half of them is going to be like one color and then blue. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one, I mean, first to elaborate on the peptides, there's certain ones that can pass through the skin barrier. And I believe one way of knowing if they can or not is to look into what's called the Dalton size of the peptide. And if it's under, I believe it's about 500 or so, it can pass through the skin.
Yeah, that means it's smaller than a pore. That's what it means. So when you say it can pass through the skin, it's still problematic. It's still problematic to say it can pass through the skin if it's smaller than fill in the blank, okay? Hmm. The second thing is, does the skin have pathways to usher it into the cell or wherever we want it? And that is why most of the time getting into the bloodstream would be a more positive effect. Or, for example, we've been working for a while to create a type of like a little vial with needles at the end of it that are like springy. So when you kind of punch it, they kind of shoot into your skin. They're very, very, very small with BPC-157. And what that would do, BPC-157 is very good for collagen deposition, but you do need to get it through those first layers and attach inflammation to it because it's not going to do anything if there's not inflammation attached to it. So the problem is that is unsanitary. So we're still working around that. But
Speaking of inflammation and antioxidants, what about like melatonin? It's becoming popular again as a Dr. John LaRance and others write books about how it's like an overlooked antioxidant, and most of it is not produced in the pineal gland. There's much more in the intestines and digestive system and around the body. And it has like a intricate role in protecting mitochondria as well as its role in the sleep-wake cycle.
Yeah. So my worry as far as melatonin, and again, that you're talking to a person that's like half biohacker and half, you know, a guy that develops skincare products, right? So I'm going to talk about the person that is interested in their own health and having the body being able to balance itself out. That's something that I believe for longevity is extremely important. So we might be sacrificing something, as I said, for optimal performance or for short-term health. But I think preserving our body's systems for as long as we can and not tinkering with them too much is something to be considered. And that's kind of a way I view high-dose melatonin or melatonin supplementation in general.
Yeah. According to Dr. LaRance, melatonin is not subject to the same endogenous feedback cycle that the other hormones are, and his own blood labs of taking 200 plus milligrams a night supposedly prove it, but I'm not sure. I'm undecided.
Yeah. I mean, again, that is something that we will only know in like 10 or 20 years. If you wanted to increase mitochondrial protection, if you wanted to have better sleep, like we can talk about things that do it without needing to wait 10 or 20 years to see how well they work, right?
Yeah. And then we'll move on now to the final stage of the interview, Amate, and that's going to be on the role of diet, because you can't talk about skin and overlook diet. And one thing that I've come across that I find particularly interesting is supplementing glycine powder. I like to do it in the night, but it can also be combined with some salt water and to allow you to intake it without having the GI distress for performance. But I've read that glycine is the rate-limiting amino acid for collagen synthesis.
Well, there are so many things I want to say at once. But first of all, glycine is one of the most important essential amino acids, in my opinion. And most of the people, when they see or they say, oh, I eat that amount of protein or anything like that, they're not actually looking at the makeup of that protein as far as amino acids. And most people are going to be glycine sufficient. That's number one. Having said that, when you talk about like taking it with water or taking it late at night, you got to understand that it's because it is a protein, you are kind of not letting your body be in a fasted state when you are taking it. So just bear that in mind as far as like the mTOR pathway and other pathways in the body. So bear that in mind if it's important for you. As far as taking trimethylglycine, so when you are supplementing on NAD and you have high levels of NAD supplementation, your body is sacrificing methyl groups in order to synthesize NAD out of NR and MN, whatever precursor you're taking. And that is why over time, I highly recommend taking any type of like a methyl group donor. And that is in a ratio of 2-to-1 or 1-to-2 as far as like how its relationship with NAD precursors. So if I take, for example, a gram of NMN, I'm going to take like 500 grams of trimethylglycine together with it in order to donate those methyl groups. But you're going to get glycine as well, which is extremely important, etc.
Milligrams. Milligrams, not grams.
500 milligrams. Yeah, don't take 500 grams. As far as like collagen synthesis, you're not going to get it. So we were talking about resveratrol, and resveratrol is a polyphenol. And in general, the discussion is going to go both ways here. So one way is to talk about them as antioxidants, and as long as they're kept in their integrity, etc. Yeah, it's positive. The other is what is going to be bioavailable in the skin. As we talked about resveratrol, we can kind of talk this in the same way about pterostilbene and some other polyphenols. So we need to have them in a bioavailable form. But in general, yeah, it's a very good component of either skincare or obviously ingesting them.
than seed oils? Yay or nay?
In the skin, they are not being used the same way as they are being used in the body. And when I say that is in your body, most, you know, seed oils are going to be utilized to build your cellular membrane. And by the way, you're going to hear a lot of people saying, oh yeah, but sunflower oil actually is identical in its chemical composition to your cell membrane. So it's okay. Yeah, it's not okay. It creates inflammation. Your body has a huge issue kind of processing it. Again, the issue is that your skin is not going to process it. If we're going to be using seed oils within a skincare formulation, also because of their size, the way they're built, they're actually be more coating the skin. They're going to be used in the skin's protective layer, and they're not going to be used, they're not going to be broken down for that matter. So that discussion is not irrelevant, but it's not like a major discussion. What I would say is that we prefer using oils that are non-comedogenic. They don't accumulate and clog pores, etc. And most seed oils are, especially in specific amounts that we need to use them in skincare formulations. So
yeah. In the diet, what do you think?
Oh, in the diet, yeah. Highly inflammatory, will cause negative consequences, bar none. Now, by the way, when we are consuming like alternative milks, etc., most of them do have seed oils in amounts that are ridiculous. Like, I mean, I made a mistake and bought, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, like an oat milk that had seed oils. The amount that you're going to be getting from that cup is ridiculous. So yeah.
But if you buy a product in a store, it has to list the seed oil under the other ingredients or inactive ingredients, so we'd know at home.
I didn't read the label until I exited the store, and then I had to go back and like, oh, I need to return this. Why? That's a long conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other big one from diet is blood sugar. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about this briefly earlier in the conversation, but what is the issue with consuming too many simple carbohydrates or sugar?
In general, our body is not built to deal with that amount of available energy all at once. So to make a very, very simple answer and then maybe go more in depth, everything works better when the body is in a good balance of energy expenditure to intake. That's the short answer. The problem is that when we are consuming modern diet, our body cannot really discern. We're eating foods that are not naturally built or they're not something that the body knows how to relate to innately. So we're going to be offsetting that balance very easily. As far as, you know, simple carbohydrates, simple sugars in our diet, we are going to develop, you know, obviously a disruption of how our body interprets insulin. Again, we talked about AGEs, about glycation. As far as the skin is concerned, that's very bad. We're also going to get our body in a growth mode. So if we want to lose weight, I see a lot of people that are just trying to balance their calories, but they are still not eliminating those simple sugars. And what happens is that those are signals for growth in the body and deposition and holding on to nutrients, etc., and not, I don't mean to calories, etc. You're cycling uphill, essentially. You're having the body want to hold on to calories and not want to burn them off or expel them because you're signaling growth. We can go on and on about simple sugars. You're creating inflammation. You are confusing the body as to how much food it needs to eat. You're getting it used to being driven by one food source or one nutrient or a fuel source. It's going to be very difficult for you to fluctuate between that and fats. That's a huge conversation. What you could do, by the way, if you did want to reduce sugar spikes when eating a meal or a large meal, is eating fiber first. So eating like greens, etc. first. And then eating the carbohydrates or the proteins And that's going to limit sugar spiking. And that's actually being replicated in a lot of models. So
suffice to say that spiking blood sugar, no matter how you slice it, is bad for health and including the skin.
Yeah. Yeah. So the skin specifically, if we get to that, if anyone have ever sees skin tags, that to me signals pre-diabetes, if not diabetes, just to let you know, like skin tags are, and I'm not talking about like birthmarks or anything like that, like skin tags that you see on people's necks, back of their neck, side of their necks, shoulders, that is like, you should, I don't know how brave you are, but you might want to tell that person that they need to see a doctor. That's number one. Now, as far as how our skin is being built, its rigidity, et cetera, again, we are creating those AGEs, those advanced glycation end products, which are sugar molecules that are rushing to attach to the protein such as collagen in our skin and render it rigid, cross-link it so it's linked to another one in a way which is not positive to how our skin looks, and you're going to develop wrinkles, sagginess, et cetera.
All right. Well, Amitai, we've been going for a while, and we'll start to wind this one down. But I am now interested in improving my virtually non-existent skincare routine. So if you were to recommend me one product from your shop, since I want to start and commit to something, and if I have 5 or 6 products, I won't use any of them. But if it's just one, I can commit to that. What would you recommend?
I agree with you, by the way. I think decision fatigue is like the number one reason people don't use skin products. So we made Care our NAD boosting moisturizer for that reason. It's like a kitchen sink. If you flip the bottle, you'll be shocked at how many good active ingredients it has, which is like a laundry list. But we do have NAD, resveratrol, a lot of good products, a lot of molecules there. That is like a multivitamin or multi-supplement, longevity supplement for the skin. So that's going to be like one product. Lasts a while. It lasts like 3-4 months. Apply it in the morning, in the evening. Every time you wash your face, apply it. You'll thank me in a few years.
Perfect. And if anyone is interested in picking up some Young Goose products, they can use the code NICKURBAN. And I believe that will save them
20% off. Yeah, 20% off their first order. And we ship everywhere around the world. If anyone has any question, they can reach out to us on Instagram, on our website, wherever they want. We're very responsive.
Yeah. I can attest to the fact that you guys are a customer-centric company, which is increasingly rare these days.
We're trying.
All right, Amitai, we'll do one more question and then do a quick rapid-fire round and call it a day. If there was a burning of the books and all knowledge on Earth is lost, but you get to save the works of 3 teachers, what would you choose and why?
Okay, Jonathan Haidt, just because I think he has done an amazing work both on happiness and on resilience. So that is something that I think we should be preserving. The second is Herodotus. He's called history's greatest liar or history's greatest historian, but both because he told the story of ancient history in a way which is compelling. And I think history, if we want to learn from it, it has to be compelling. So Herodotus. And I'd say the third one, that's a personal one. It would be Yuval Noah Harari. His book, Sapien, I think allows us a glimpse into who we are and why we are the way we are. And then obviously his work later on, kind of maybe that's why all the everything's been burnt, because he was right with his prophecies. But reading his opinions about the future can definitely educate us.
It's amazing how many prophecies come true from old texts.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We'll do a rapid fire round now. Botox, yes or no?
No, but it's completely individual.
Derma rolling.
Yes, professional. At home, make sure it's sanitary.
Okay. What areas of your own health and performance are you currently working on?
VO2 max, cold exposure, and mindfulness.
Is there any particular topic that you're finding especially interesting these days?
senescent cells.
And finally, what's one thing that the Young Goose tribe does not know about you?
That I'm a major history buff.
I figured from your book choices.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, Amitai, thank you for joining me today. It's been really fun chatting, learning about skincare and this whole world that I've never taken the time to explore and have written off for my entire life.
Yes, sir. It was absolutely my pleasure.
All right, until next time, I'm Nick Urban here with Amitai Eshel signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier.